Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on Book 7 of the overall Lost Fleet saga, but Book 1 of the Beyond the Frontier segment of that saga. This is Dreadnought, like all of the other books. It's by Jack Campbell. We've been reading the Kindle version, the ebook version. There are paperbacks of these. And where we had left the characters last, it's they won the war with the Syndicate Empire, the Alliance?
The Alliance.
The Alliance against the Syndics. They'd brokered a peace there, a lot of that due to the looming threat of an alien race that had been named the Enigmas, that hadn't been seen but had been encountered a time or two. And Captain Jack Gary, who had led the fleet to victory, like a fish out of water, Captain America style, he'd been lost at the beginning of a century-long war. Stuck in an escape pod that had, you know, put him into like a cryo sleep or whatever. And he'd gotten woken up 100 years later by his side. In the meanwhile, the government had turned him into this legendary war hero that there are all these sayings about. And he's as much a legend more than a man.
Yes.
And having to live up to that is, oh, well, if Black Jack Gary's back, we'll put him in charge of the fleet. He'll win the day. So he had a lot to live up to. And he did.
Yes.
As much because he was a capable officer as over that century of war, when you're fighting an intergalactic war and neither side is winning, you tend to be losing a lot of people, including those that are the most senior ones, and therefore any kind of tribal knowledge your side has gets whittled away over that century, because it just people don't last long enough to hand it off.
Yeah.
So he's bringing back traditional things that were, you know, norms in his time that had just been forgotten over the century.
One of the things that comes up very early in the book is, you know, when you were in the fleet, for lack of a better expression, the first time around, how long did you think a ship would last? And that was kind of an interesting conversation in terms of he'd already noticed that these ships had sharper edges.
Literally sharper edges from the welds and stuff.
Yeah.
Not just figurative ones, but they were slapping ships together as fast as they can because they were losing them so fast. Whereas in his time, you would build it like we would build a aircraft carrier today to last 20, 30, 40 years, maybe longer. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if you're going through them and they're barely lasting 3 or 4, well, you build them to last 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So one of the things that did come up was the ships are aging at what he considers an alarming rate. But they're just starting to have system failures because it wasn't worth building them to a higher tolerance.
Well, and their maintenance procedure was different. When they put it in the yard for repairs, they only did necessary repairs. They didn't do any upgrades or any of what he considered routine maintenance because they figured, well, the ship's just going to get destroyed next time out anyway. Why waste the money?
Counterbalance that with what we've heard about Disneyland, where they would track when they put a light bulb in so they could say, well, its lifespan is X amount of time, so before it hits there and it'll burn out, we'll replace it.
Yeah.
You never see a burnt out light bulb.
Yeah.
Here, it's the thing's going to burn out, but the building will have burned down by then, so who cares?
Yes.
You know, and there's a pragmatism to that. You don't want to waste all your parts throwing them on ships that are about to I don't want to say scuttled, but, you know.
But he begins to wonder if he has been sent with the fleet of oldest ships on an impossible mission because he's not expected to return. And this way, no one in Alliance space knows that these ships were going to basically self-destruct anyway.
Die of old age, yeah.
You know, or was this something that the people back in the Alliance didn't know either?
Well, he early on gets re-promoted to Admiral, because he'd been promoted in Book 6 to go finish the war, does that, And part of that agreement he had is then he goes back to Captain. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where we left stuff off. He and Captain Desjani go off for a vacation and get married in the process. Here we are about a month later coming back as now, again, re-promoted Admiral Gary is getting tasked with take this entire fleet they happen to be older ships, but it doesn't dawn on him at the time. Take it beyond Syndic space to where this other race is and go. And he's given the set of contradictory orders. Establish, communication with them, but respect their privacy. You know, go negotiate a peace, but one that doesn't lock us into anything down the line. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
And that's what he sets out to go do. But to do that, he's got to get through Syndic space, which they've got a treaty agreement with that they're kind of skirting the line on.
Yeah. Well, and then at the last second, the mission gets added to.
Yes, you've got to go rescue these prisoners at this POW camp. They happen to be high-ranking political prisoners.
Yeah.
And there was the Syndic CEO there was trying to, you know, get some money out of the fleet to pay essentially a ransom.
Well, and that's the first time that Jack Gary encounters someone who basically feels they can use his reputation against him.
Yeah, because Gary's established that he's not going to fire on civilian targets. He's going to do the honorable thing. And this Syndic CEO is basically saying, well, if that's the case, then the honorable thing to do is going to be to pay, and I'll paint that picture.
Yeah.
And try to use his morals against him. Doesn't work out.
No.
But it made for, you know, an interesting battle scene.
Yeah.
But then once we start getting into Enigma space, for lack of a better term, that's what they're calling this, what the Syndics had called this alien race, since they were the ones bordering with them, we start learning bits and pieces about the alien race, not a whole lot.
We start improving our assumptions.
Refining them at the very least. Identifying which ones are assumptions. Oh, we were thinking the entire race works one way.
Yeah.
They get a ways through that race's space, and they realize, well, there's internal borders. Why would they do that? Is that successive rings of defenses? Or maybe just like the Syndics and the Alliance were both human, but fighting, maybe there's some of that going on.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting seeing kind of the fleet politics going on, particularly after the POWs get rescued.
Well, and that's another time where Jack Gary's kind of coming to new understandings in terms of, at first, it's why do we have to go to this camp and rescue these POWs on the way into a mission? Because to him, yes, these prisoners need rescuing, but should we rescue them only to take them into danger?
And potentially get captured again, maybe by a different race.
Which is what happened in a previous book. They rescued people and then almost immediately had battle losses.
Yeah.
You know, so he has reason to fear this. But then when he realizes who they've rescued, it's kind of so if I just rescued 100 people who now all want to fight me for my job,
mm-hmm.
and then a little while later he begins to wonder, you know, some people say the only good Jack Gary is a dead blackjack.
Yeah.
Have I just...
The best war hero is a dead one because they're easier to control politically.
Yeah, and he begins to think, wait a sec, did I just rescue a bunch of people that the government would prefer die on this mission so they no longer have to deal with them as rescued prisoners?
That are equally inconvenient for the government in power as he is to them.
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting because I also drew parallels to the second book of the first arc where they rescued Falco.
Yes.
Who became a major thorn in his side. And now he's being told, I've got, you know, 100, 200 people like him.
Yeah. Well, and he realizes at one point that he accidentally paints all the rescued people with that brush.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's so busy with the mission, he doesn't have time to sort out the bad apples.
What was interesting is when he had contacted one of the higher-ups, an admiral.
Lagman,
I think it was. And basically said, hey, here's something I got. We've got to figure out what's going on with this race. You guys are going to look at it with fresh eyes because you've been out of the picture for a bit. Let's take advantage of that. Here's all the records of what we've got. Here's what the Syndic has. Review the stuff. Figure out what they're thinking. Military, what would be a good strategy? Do they fight this way all the time? Or did the one time we meet them, does that seem to be an anomaly? You don't come up with anything that's no harm, no foul. But if you do and you guys are experienced guys, that's a big help. And it turns out that the one, you know, when they're in jump space, they can only send terse messages.
Think tweets.
Yeah. Maybe not even those that long, though. Yeah. But they get one message from that group coming back before they get out of jump space, and it's enough to save the fleet.
Yes. Well, and one of the things he had said to Lagman was basically, because you've been out of action, you haven't been exposed to our assumptions.
Yeah, you don't have the same preconceptions.
Yeah, and that was a good way to use them, and I loved Lagman's response, because it was basically, you know, I thought you were going to throw us a bone that was right up there with the counting death bunnies we've already been doing, but this is actually, if we come up with something, it's something useful.
And it's not busy work.
Yeah.
He understood that this was something that they had to be given something.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they're loose cannons and they're problems. But to be given something that could actually produce value for the fleet.
Yes.
Was respected. And it was funny because his kind of condition was for the group of people like himself that actually have looked over what Blackjack Gary has done since he's been back. And it's like, wow, this is good stuff. They want to learn from him.
Yes.
Can you spend a little time and explain what you did, why you did it, so we can...
Yeah.
And I was a little disappointed near the end of the book that they didn't touch back either on that.
Yes.
Or even Blackjack, Captain Gary, Admiral Gary, actually, acknowledging that this group pretty much saved the fleet when they jumped out at Enigma Space at one point.
The closest they came to that acknowledgement was Lagman was now in the fleet conferences.
Yeah.
So I took that as a form of acknowledgement, but I would have liked a more blatant one. Staying on the theme of things that kind of got dropped, we go through Enigma Space. One of our orders is to find the far boundary of Enigma Space. And we're picking up ships following us as we're going from the Enigmas, which is part of why we assume they're all one united organization.
Right, but then Gary is theorizing that what they're doing may actually be counter to what they want, because just as the humans had united against the Enigmas, their human presence in Enigma space may be uniting the Enigma against them.
Right, but at the very end of the book, I have no idea where those trailing ships are. If they haven't even come out of jump space yet, if they didn't follow us into jump space.
I don't think Gary's group knows either.
Okay.
Which is why we weren't.
Okay.
Because what happens is, at one point they jumped out in Enigma space, and the warning was, beware a knife in the back, and...
It was watch your back,
watch
and
your
he
back.
Had knives on the brain.
Yeah.
Which was funny.
But as you come out of a jump point, they basically decide to do a U-turn and prepare for attack from behind the jump point, which Johnny was saying at first, was, well, that's impossible. We could never do that. Well, faster than light communication. What if you had this? What if all of which the Enigmas seem to have.
Yeah.
Plus more maneuverability.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, yeah, they can. And sure enough, they did anyways. But then when they survive that and then jump into this other race territory, which we don't even have a name for yet, that group of other aliens, because they don't seem human as best we can tell, have anchored a small planetoid, it seems like, a moon or something, near the jump points that have just massive weaponry.
Yeah.
So the minute they came out there, they were just getting barraged by missiles.
Well, and they were saying if we hadn't done instant evasive maneuvers, which is something we picked up in one of the earlier books when we feared mines had been laid at the jump gate. So a lot of the lessons we've learned in earlier books we're continuing to employ.
The exit of that jump point, though, is one that I think visually could be very interesting in like a TV show or a movie.
Definitely.
Because what they wind up doing is having all the ships by type, basically, as they've turned around to you know, reverse or whatever, turn in unison so which they can be blocking the missiles and such with their weaponry. And as they're running out of weaponry, because they can only fire so many hell lances and stuff like that, then the next group that is either less maneuverable or slower or whatever decelerates to take that trailing edge, turns, fires, whittling down the incoming barrage even more. And they keep doing that up until their what do they call the...
The auxiliary?
The auxiliary ships, thank you. That are the slowest, least maneuverable, wind up in the tail section and doing that. It was something that just seemed, because they tighten the formation and stuff like that, could be a very interesting visual that we haven't really seen in like a Star Wars or other types of space combat stuff.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that some of the tactics we're getting here are not just standard sci-fi, this is how, you know, starship battles happen. So I thought that was interesting. But they basically wind up there in this new segment of space controlled by yet another unknown alien race with massive weaponry. And it's like, well, we got to get to one of those jump points to get out. And man, they've got a lot of weapons there. So how they get past that, you know, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where they trail off on this book.
Well, I guess we have some civilian scientists on board who are experts in non-human species, and by experts, we mean theorists.
Well, yeah, because when he's getting those on board, he's like, so we've never met or even conceived of an alien race until now, but you've got a handful of experts? Okay.
Yeah. And they've had some interesting theories.
They have. I don't know that they've had any huge, massive insights, including after we'd hit the POW camp inside of Enigma Space, where they rescued 333 or so people, or yeah, as many of them as they could, from the hollowed-out asteroid. And well, the 333 prisoners there, it's got to have some significance.
Yeah, because we were given to believe that was the full number and that was always that number.
Somebody dies, something else happens to fill the slot.
Yeah.
No more, no less for any duration. And it's interesting because as far as I could tell, that would be 3 times 111, and I think those are both prime numbers. Not that I think that matters, but there seemed to be some significance to the number, to the enigmas.
Yeah.
But we don't know exactly what. But it was interesting to see that there was a way for them to house prisoners, with the prisoners never having met their jailers.
Yes. Yeah.
And again, the utter privacy aspect.
Well, and some of those prisoners were the children. It sounded like some might even be the grandchildren of prisoners.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, there were a lot of things that pretty much continued the story as I expected it to, going after the Enigma race and stuff. There were a couple things that were parallels to what had happened in the first arc. The POWs from Syndic Space, very similar to Falco and that stuff. Mm-hmm. One of the ones they rescued was the wife of, or not the wife, the husband of Rion.
Yes.
She had lost her senator co-president status, so now she's just an emissary from the government.
Mm-hmm.
She seems to know more than she's letting on and hinting at a few things, but it's unclear exactly what her and her co-emissary or whatever,
yeah,
if they've got a bigger game plan or not. So I'm curious what's going on there. And of course, her husband stirred up a little bit of trouble at first, but was able to be handled. I'm trying to think if there are anything else that were kind of major similarities between this and the first group of novels.
For me, in some ways, there was the similarity to book six of, you know, I thought in book six we were going to go meet the Enigma. And yet in that book, it kind of felt like we dealt with the Enigma. We went, we had battle, we came home. It kind of felt over. Here, it felt like we're going to go meet the Enigma. We just blew right through their space and met somebody else.
I took that as a similarity to the first book where they were dealing with the Syndics and then now, okay, we're starting a chase through space or whatever.
Mm, okay.
It's not derivative, but it's,
yeah,
you know, at this point, they're now in this other sector of space that they may have to go chase back through Enigma space and get home if they choose to turn tail and run at this point.
Well, and they're refining their understanding of the destructive capability of the hypernet gates.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the Enigmas have them in their space, but they seem to only have them in the border star system.
As if they've used them as landmines of sort.
Yeah. A defensive barrier.
Yeah.
A border wall of sorts.
But there only seemed to be, like, two systems in a row, jump point-wise, on the Syndic space side, but there's, like, three on this other side, making it seem, well, and obviously when we get to the other side and have those battle planets, for lack of a better term, it does seem like that side is the more contested border.
Yeah.
And it could be that the problems that the Enigma race is having there is why they're so hostile against humans.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've had one and have been fighting a long war on that side, you've got to assume maybe all the aliens are that way.
Yeah. It definitely makes me curious for the next book, because we've been given new perspective on the message from the Enigmas in terms of, now we're starting to think, wait, maybe they're so defensive and so private that they weren't even honest with us when they were saying, this is not one of your star systems, your alliance, not Syndic, so you shouldn't be here, you shouldn't be fighting.
Yeah, that they were giving a reason that they thought we would believe and understand versus what was their real rationale.
Yeah.
And we also learned that they're probably amphibian.
Which was fascinating in terms of how the water in the ships would change capabilities.
In terms of inertia dampening, in terms of other aspects.
Yeah.
Giving more maneuverability and stuff, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah.
And kind of ironic, given that the Alliance ships apparently are aquatic-looking.
Yes.
Although they really don't deal too much with that in the books. They touched on it in one of the novels.
Yeah.
One of the later ones, fifth or sixth. We also introduced a few new characters in this book in terms of how to deal with the fleet admiralty, or not admiralty, but command, and how to send the messages and kind of hide how much it's going to cost to repair the ships and
yeah,
some of that stuff. And I think that kind of stuff is going to play into the story bigger in later books. I'm just not sure how yet.
Right. We have the junior officer, Shamrock, who can confuse and unconfuse things. We got Giannini, I think it is, who can make basically anything you need appear.
Well, but is also kind of checking if some of the other officers are, you know, maybe doing things they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, doing things on the side.
Yeah. And then the other thing we've got going on, they started to touch on in book six a little, was Gary's niece.
Yes.
Who seems to be trying to be overly heroic now. And where they ended the book, in one of the, I guess it was that last confrontation there at the new race area, where her ship just about literally scraped the the Dauntless.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, Gary's flagship. Johnny was not amused by that.
Yeah.
They didn't say how close, but it was startlingly close.
Yeah. Well, apparently Jane Gary went home on leave during that month and came back determined to live up to Blackjack Gary.
Yeah, I think we've got to learn in the next book or two what's going on with that.
Yeah.
Because the way things were at the end, he would have been within his rights and still is to relieve her of duty. I don't think he will.
Yeah. Well, she's disobeying orders and being a bit reckless. I mean, it was at the asteroid mission that the rest of the fleet was sent past the asteroid. And she was slowing down her ship and two others, trying to stay close enough to back up Dauntless and other ships.
I mean, she's got the right reasons, but she's not following his commands.
Yeah.
And putting other stuff at risk in the process. And then particularly getting to where she almost potentially crashed into another ship.
Yeah.
It borderlines on showboating, although that's clearly not her intent.
Yeah.
So the question is, what's going on there? I mean, there's a lot happening in these novels.
Yes.
But it's happening at a good pacing, so it doesn't feel rushed, it doesn't feel overly complex or convoluted.
Well, and they're doing a good job with Gary and Desjani's marriage.
Yes. And setting the seeds that, just like in the first book, there was the, are they doing things they shouldn't be doing kind of a thing. And those rumors definitely taking on a different tone and nature in this series of novels.
Yeah.
Because there are people looking for them to fail.
Yes.
So overall, I really enjoyed this novel. I thought it was a lot of fun. I don't know that I would recommend somebody jumping in here. I think you could. I think they give you everything you need. But I think you benefit from having read the other six.
I agree. There were a few moments where it referenced things from the previous six, and I was kind of struggling to pull those pieces back in. So yeah, I definitely think reading the previous six helps.
But I do appreciate how the author's doing a good job on giving you the breadcrumbs to remember stuff.
Yeah.
Reminds periodically, oh yeah, Captain Gary's a man out of time. And like when Tulev was used to negotiate with the syndics at one point.
Yes.
It's well known in his record that the syndics should also know that they've totally blasted his world apart.
Yeah.
So he's probably not going to be overly sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out he's surprisingly sympathetic, but not one that on paper you'd look at it and say, oh yeah, he's a pushover.
Yeah, exactly.
So there were some aspects there that was fun.
That's what we haven't touched on is Bradamont, the Alliance officer who's been secretly working with Alliance intelligence to send disinformation to the syndics because she was taken as a prisoner and formed a relationship with a syndic officer.
Yeah, I'm curious if they're going to go somewhere with that or not.
Me too.
And, yeah, I...
She's one that when you look at on paper, she shouldn't be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
But all of her actions have been honorable. She's followed orders. She's put the Alliance first. It'll be interesting to see how she plays out.
The fleet, even though it's bigger than it was in the past series of novels, is disciplined enough and not having too many of the showboaters or reckless ones. And there's still one or two ships that are problems for him.
Yeah.
But surprisingly few. And I think if he had tried to do this mission with the state the fleet was in the first book, they'd be dead.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they could have gotten through the ambush in either the Enigma space or coming out of the final jump point there. And survived, because most of the ships wouldn't have followed orders.
Yeah.
And wouldn't have been able to maintain position and such. The other thing we haven't touched on, and I thought it was a minor point, but a humorous one, as they're in Enigma space, once they got past the border, none of these stars had any designations.
Yeah.
So they start referencing, you know, Limbo, Purgatory, Inferno, other names for hell, essentially.
Yes, yes.
Which I thought was humorous.
Well, Gary tried suggesting some names, and Des Johnny shot them all down.
The interplay between Gary and Des Johnny is a lot of fun, because there's a couple of times it's like, well, what does she want me to do?
Yeah, yes.
And one or two times he says just the wrong thing.
How long am I going to pay for that?
Exactly, and she's like, I haven't decided.
Yes.
It's fun. I think the two work well together. They're a good dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see, again, where all of this kind of plays out.
Yeah.
So there's another four novels in this arc.
Yeah.
For the Beyond the Frontier. And then there's another series of novels that take place, I think, concurrent with this in Syndic space of Lost Stars.
Oh, yeah.
And then once we finish these, we may head into those. And then I think there's another three-novel series, because I think that one's four. And then after that's a three-novel series of the Genesis Fleet, which I think is set back in Gary's original time.
Oh, interesting.
Whether it's with Gary or before Gary, I don't know, but it's, I think, the early days of the war.
Interesting.
And when I was looking some of that up, it looked like the author was then trying to figure out kind of where to go next.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I can see where there's challenges there. But so far, it's a lot of fun. And again, stumbled across this by reading a five-issue miniseries by the author from Titan Comics of Lost Fleet Corsair, which I think takes place after this arc.
Interesting.
So there were some assumptions I was making based on having read that I'm rethinking now that we've got like another alien race and such. So we'll see what happens. So anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.